are listening to Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. Dwayne.
Hello.
Niall.
Good day.
And it's me, Brian. This week's episode, we are covering anime which aired between the 27th of November and the 3rd of December 2017. With once again the solitary exception of Bono Bono, where we are about 7 weeks behind. And, as almost always, let's start with Bono Bono. Episode 29 of Season 2, What You Need and What You Don't Need. An episode which hit a little too close to home for me.
Yeah, yep. I was kind of giving side eyes to the amount of robots on my shelves and whatnot, you know. I was just like, show, leave me alone.
I was also recently thinking about laughing salesmen and then this baby thing as well. The declutter your home philosophy.
And the Time Bokan 24 recent episode also had that. Tips mums will love after the break.
One weird tip, local mom uses declutter her house.
Yes. I hate it.
Anime convention room dealers hate her.
Yes, Bono gets given some ridiculous thing. It hurts when you stick it under your arm.
That's its purpose, its function, and it works very well for that.
By Fede, so he's going to store it in his storage space underneath a tree. But it's all full up. What's he going to do? With this rock.
Well, he could take that rock out. Yes. And then put it in. But then he's going to have to carry the rock with him everywhere. And then he'll be the guy who doesn't put stuff away, and the put away man will put him away. Catch 22. Tough one. I did laugh again. I love the put away man.
He's great.
Well, I was like, just the crime in particular is like, yeah, well, I'm a put away man. This is like in my job title. So I'm not putting you away for any kind of other slight. It's just because you literally won't put anything away. So that's kind of an affront to me personally.
And it's like, if I put this stone on the ground, it just looks like I've dropped it.
Because it is a rock.
So he puts it on against a twig, so it's precariously balanced.
And that looks like someone put that there. Yeah. Yes. That has hardly happened by accident. So he tests it on his dad to see if his dad thinks that it was put there or fell down, and his dad thinks this is the novel concept and tries it himself.
And it worked, I suppose. Didn't think someone dropped it there.
Yeah, no, it did get his attention.
So then he suggests, why don't you store this stone on top of my head?
At which he fails eventually.
Yes.
But you can't walk.
Yeah. I can walk.
I can run. Can you lie down? You sure I can? No.
I failed you, son.
He's very broken up about this.
He's got a weird dad, that Bono.
Yeah, but he just explained that you should just go through your stuff and decide what you need and what you don't need. But Bono gets all into his head. It's like, well, I don't need this today, but I might need that tomorrow.
Need it today, but I might need it tomorrow, so I'll put it in the need pile.
Yeah, this is after he's gone through some of the stuff that he's got with his dad.
Like the cut of a tree stump and that kind
lots of things
thing.
Circular. Maybe that's a tie-in with the Classicoid episode, which would air 7 weeks later. So he assembles the piles, and one pile is huge, one pile is just a bunch of tiny stones and twigs.
Yeah. And his dad correctly guesses which is the necessary one.
End of episode!
Yeah, no, pretty good. Like you said, a bit too personal attacking this episode, but, you know.
I'm this way in particular about clothing. I'm very bad at getting rid of clothing.
That was exactly what I was thinking as well, watching it. But then I remembered Ian Savonius's article, Power to the Pack Rat, complaining about people. His thesis is that you've got to be... It's like shaming the poor for wanting to hang on to things. Encouragement of decluttering and shaming hoarders. It's like...
Is it that thing from... what was the name of that movie? It was one of the George Clooney fucking films where you should be able to fit everything you have in like a travel-on suitcase kind of shit.
Up in the air.
Yeah. Which I just thought was, that's just sad.
Well,
is the point of that film, I think.
Well, yeah, I took from that, you know, like a good way actually just to handle airports, because this actually came in useful.
Oh, no, in terms of travel, that's a really good plan.
The last 2 months has been very useful to me, because I have flown about 4 or 5 times in as many weeks. I was like, I was in a lot of airports for the last 2 months.
Yeah, I look back at 2005 and I was like, used to be able to travel with managing to fit everything into one shoulder bag. And I'm like, I don't think I could do that now. Even just going to my mum's involves filling an entire boot of stuff. Now, admittedly, a lot of
if you need it?
Well, it's most of it's board games.
Ah, okay.
Because I'm also going around to see friends to play board games. I don't know which board game they want to play, so I better bring loads of board games.
You might need that tomorrow, so yeah.
And then we'll just play Insider instead of these nice big board games that I brought.
Hey, the people have pulled under a vote and they've spoken.
Yes, also because there was more people wanting to play board games than I was expecting. So.
Mm. Yeah, I agree with the whole kind of, you know, there's, look, you got to get a good balance around the whole cluttering or decluttering thing. I would think the whole a bit of the kind of decluttering movement as well as like, well, you just buy something new to replace it. And I thought, no, why fucking just spend money on anything that's not going to last just to fucking throw it away? And I also get it about my shoes. Everyone said, oh, your shoes are very scuffed up and kind of, you know, getting kind of worn down. You get a pair of new shoes. I like these shoes and they cost me a lot of money. I'll just get them fixed or I'll clean them up.
Yeah, this is the byline. The article is on Jacobin. It's all power to the pack rats. The byline is, in the sleek Apple future, our outdated possessions are turned into symbols of poverty.
Hmm.
So it's like how the encouragement to be, stop hoarding, declutter, make everything stark and open space. Stop having stuff.
Don't have any warmth in your home. No one wants that.
Well, it's obviously
warmth
but,
or memories
I was good. The Laughing Salesman episode obviously did actually attack it.
It is shown as a negative thing.
Yes, by that the woman he had hired to sell this sparse flat.
Yeah, she had that really nice broom cupboard where she lived.
Yeah, because that was more homely, and she enjoyed that.
Yeah, can't have many people over in the broom cupboard, but still.
Also, why is Bono worried about where he needs to store stuff? He lives in a forest. He could just go to put stuff in another tree.
All the good ones are claimed, you know?
It's a good tree, though.
This is his one. Also, he could store it underwater where nobody could get it. But,
true, yes. But the sea could get it.
The wood might rot away. I don't want that.
Anyway, it's a very thoughtful episode as it often is.
Well, it's always very thoughtful, and it's very ponderous, sort of circuitous way. It always arrives at some grain of wisdom or truth. You gotta give it that to Bono.
Even though the truth in this is he's not gonna do it.
Yeah, but that is the ultimate truth. You know, you might know this, but it's up to you whether you will actually act upon it or not. And most of the time, you probably won't. You got a lot of shit going on. I'm buried over here.
Yeah. Anyway, Bono likes his circles, and who else likes his circles? It's Beethoven in Classicaloid. Episode, was it 9 this week?
9,
A World Without Circles.
I thought that they were just doing that episode preview to throw us off what the actual plot was about, but nope, it was about circles.
Yep.
Well, I thought it was going to be I had a copy episode last season where Beethoven was going to be saying about this one thing. It's going to be following his entire internal monologue for the whole episode as to why he's so gaga about this new thing. But it's it's a bit of that, but a lot of kind of other different things alongside it. It was kind of odd.
Yeah, it's it was a kind of a bit of a not distraction, a misdirect is the word I'm looking for, because it's actually
roundabout way to get into something historically relevant, I suppose. Yeah,
because while it appears to be a Beethoven episode, it's actually a Chopin episode. Beethoven has a vision of circles. Circles are giving him inspiration. He feels if he looks at circles more and more, he'll be able to finally break through and recover some sort of memory. But all his circles around him, this is at the breakfast table, start disappearing. Where are the circles going?
Yeah, and shot from behind of Chopin having eaten his sunny side up egg.
Yes.
Mm.
Yeah, so they can't. Everything starts getting stolen that's got a circle on it, except Schubert's glasses. I did like that joke. Is he think that he's had his glasses stolen, and then it cuts to a different angle, and he's just wearing them on top of his head. He's just.
Yeah, where are my glasses? You know, like Velma on the ground.
Yes.
And I did like the way the lads were like, oh, it's probably that motherfucker. And then they kind of look at him. And I don't even know if they've seen the glasses. They're just like, no, it's not him. He's too pathetic. Ouch.
Yeah, because they run around accusing everybody until Chopin's the only one left to accuse. And it turns out he did have all the circular objects that he'd stolen in the house inside his room. So they get him out. But then he uses his music and causes rain clouds, causing everything to get wet.
It rains indoors, but when he kind of stops, there's a singular cloud on Beethoven.
Yes. And then Beethoven becomes unable to see circles.
Yeah, he sees squares where there are other shapes. Actually, I think he can only see squares or something.
Yeah, it's only squares, because when they do like the testing on him with the psychic card things, shows him an X, it's a square.
Yeah.
But then eventually when Mum comes home with some croissants, he can see croissants. Literally, because these are just like photorealistic croissants they've inserted into the show. And then, yes, that breaks his inspiration. And he goes, yes, now I know what to do. He uses his music, and we get a version of Moonlight.
Mm.
Sounds very like Sparks, I thought.
Sparks?
Sparks?
Yes. Do you know Sparks?
I don't think so.
Fresh my memory.
Russ and Ron Mayall, 70s act. For a brief while, they held the rights to My the Psychic Girl. They were going to make it into a movie.
It's probably one of those songs that I have heard, but I've heard a lot of.
No, it's the band, rather. Sparks of the band. This Town Isn't Big Enough for the Both of Us is probably their best known.
Okay.
One of them's got like a Hitler moustache, or had a Hitler moustache.
I would say head now, this day and age.
I think he wears it pencil thin now. Okay, right, that's obviously... People listening will know who Sparks are. People older than you too. and so then we get into why Chopin's mad. He doesn't want Beethoven to rediscover Moonlight because in the past he was accused of... plagiarizing it in what was the piece of music?
Fantastique Impromptu.
Yeah, so the thing he did in the previous season.
Or Fantasy, I think it was.
Oh. And they're like, it doesn't sound anything like, and then he goes, oh no, this bit is the bit which sounds like.
No, it's like, wait a minute, it's like, you know, you're trying to get your friend to listen to a song. No, wait for this bit to kick in. Okay. Now. Your man has can feel him, bro. Because he was trying to praise, it's like, oh, it's just like your fantasy impromptu. And at that, he freaked out again. Chopin freaked out again.
Yeah.
Because it's like, that's the one thing I'm trying to not draw attention to.
But then Schubert explains how he's often accused of being a plagiarist, but it's fine to be inspired by great people like Beethoven.
Yeah, even Beethoven's like, it's fine as long as you made the piece of music to move you kind of thing. It's fine if it's a cover or... inspired by something else.
And they think they got it solved. They think it was solved, and then they find him bad-mouthing Beethoven online.
Mm. dear.
I think that's all the main points of the plot. There's loads of jokes in it, though. There's at one point they're all dressed up as various famous detectives.
Yeah. They turn around and they're all detectives. I think the animation was off a little again, but it's just a kind of sitcom.
I would say, it's a little off model, but nothing bad. In fact, I quite like these slightly off model designs, but there's lots of pose to pose animation.
Yeah.
With very little animation in between. They're like being a pose, they'll do a load of talking, then they'll move to another pose, do a load of talking.
Yeah. That kind of messed with it a little bit, but I mean, like, the comedy's still up there, so.
Yeah. And again, it was another episode where List is the one who gets drawn the best. Quite clearly.
Did it just like... I wonder why. It could be... No.
It's their personality.
Yes.
I mean, like, I do like List as a character, but yeah.
It's definitely noticeable, particularly when things start wandering off model a little, is that. And it's a List episode next week. Anything else to add, guys? I think I flew through the plot.
It's a pretty basic plot. Like, it's just set up for them to do jokes and bits, I suppose, yeah. I was wondering, were they saving some of the budget so they could do that CGI Mozart thing where he becomes all pixely?
Yes, I wish there'd been a little bit more of that. I could have used...
Yeah, yeah, you've made that model. You might as well use it.
Anything else, Niall?
No, this, like, as I said, it was expecting that one thing, which I wouldn't mind seeing, like something on par with that Coffee Bean one from the last season. Yeah. Even do something like that with another character, you could probably get ring some good episode content out of that. So we'll see how it goes. Maybe we have like the main guy on again for if you can pull him off of. put them off Osmatsu for a week. They can probably get something up that level again. We'll see.
I don't know. I don't want to pull off Osmatsu if we get episodes like we got this week.
Oh, yeah.
That was a pretty fine episode of Mr. Osmatsu. Might as well talk about Mr. Osmatsu then, in that case.
Fine.
So this episode was called... Half of it was Campaign Starting Now, and what was the second half called? Again, they didn't list it.
Yami's Arcade something?
Yeah, it was like one giant Game Center Arashi parody.
Yeah.
a character who also has very big front teeth. But first we get this lengthy piece where Ichimatsu's trying to get to sleep, but his brothers, God, they're so annoying. They won't switch the light off. They won't go to sleep. It's 2 o'clock in the morning. You're just not going to sleep.
It's one of those really good battle episodes.
Yes. Yeah. So who's sleep? Jushimatsu is sleeping and Karamatsu are already asleep.
Yes.
Well, Karamatsu's asleep after he jams like a Matryoshka doll in his mouth or something.
Yeah, like you do.
Because up to that point he's looking at like Hot Boys magazine so he can get tips and being very loud about it. The oldest and youngest are looking at fucking YouTubers.
Videos, yeah. And Karamatsu is reading his light
novels. Through some light novels. Yeah, yeah.
Why are you starting another light novel now, this time of night?
Ah, dear.
They dim the lights, and now Jushimatsu can't sleep because...
Jushimatsu and Karamatsu don't like the small light. Main lights and no lights.
I'm wondering about it. Now. It keeps sticking in my mind that I can't sleep. I was really feeling all Ichimatsu this week, trying to get to sleep. I've been trying to get to sleep. It's been tough. You've got a night shift pattern and it fucks up your fun sleeping. It's very hard to get to sleep. And it's like, and also other outside things getting away, like makes it worse. Like that neighbor of mine keeps letting his dog out, and he's been kind of stuck in the back alley for a half hour at a time, and the dog is yipping and yowling, and I'm trying to fucking sleep, and this is...
do you have an eye mask, Niall?
An eye mask will still... I don't hear through my eyes.
I know, but I'm just going through these... I was going to say, do you have the earplugs after that?
Earplugs.
Get yourself
some lying around.
Worst I used to do, like back in any college party thing, where you'd end up in a room with a bunch of motherfuckers who you don't know and are going to be loud, is what was it? Sigur Rós on my earphones and a t-shirt over my head. that did me every time, man.
Do I have anything over my head when I'm trying to sleep? Because again, as each method points out, yeah, but I feel like I'm kind of hot and uncomfortable, and I'm not like having to breathe the same recycled air or under the blanket all the time. It makes me feel like you're suffocating. I don't like it.
Have you tried a towel?
Waterboarding.
Well, maybe for the other people, yeah.
Yeah.
but. Yeah, no, all been there. It's pretty good. It's rare that they do. They have done it, but it's rare that they seem to let you sympathize with Ishimatsu over the rest of them.
Up to a point.
Unstable one. Oh, yeah, up to a point, sure.
But then
sure.
his campaign begins against them.
Where he makes them basically strangers.
Yes.
With the social niceties. I don't know, a lot of it's a pretty good idea. I mean, like, you live with six guys, you probably shouldn't be drinking out of the carton. but yeah, even though it becomes draconian, it becomes entirely against Osamatsu, who all the brothers agree is the worst brother.
Well, yes, because he refuses to break. And then as he's refusing to break, he's doing horrible things to all the other brothers, particularly the bit where, one after another, yeah. he's pawning their stuff off at the pawn shop.
Yeah.
But every time Ichimatsu tries to guilt him, he's just like, what? What?
Yeah.
What are you picking on me for? Mm.
And then it becomes, yeah, he gets voted down 5-1, which is a recurring thing. Ichimatsu is trying to manipulate odds at various points of not waking other brothers up. So while the brothers are asleep...
It's a 3-1 situation, yes. rather than the 5-1.
Yeah, while they're asleep, they're on his side. But if they wake up, they'll be against him. Well, I got this coming up for you, Niall. In February, get a pre-order in. You can have a One Punch Man Saitama eye mask.
The serious Ooh. Eyes or the...
Both. Flip-sided. Oh, yes. The lovely. Blank eyes and the serious eyes.
Maybe... Should I just try it like just like a plain eye mask, see, like, if it's for me first?
Yes, I would do that first, yes.
Hmm.
I find them very useful.
Mm.
For cutting out all light.
It's usually the light isn't a problem, it's just... the power of it is just a kind of external noises like that happen occasionally. Not all the time, but, you know, just sometimes. And second is... probably more trying to convince your brain to shut down, which can be very easy or very hard depending on what kind of morning it is.
Mm.
I know all the tricks. I've tried them all. A good one to do, I find as well, if you need one, have a shower just before you go to bed, because that lowers your core body temperature and convinces your body that needs to go to sleep.
Huh, okay.
Right, the second half, though. How does Ayami get the 300 yen in the first place? I can't remember.
He
that
starts
bit.
Searching under a vending machine.
Oh, that's it. Yeah. Yes. And he's like, oh, I got 300 yen to the arcade.
For being a good person or yes. something is the way he says it. I don't know.
Before he gets there, he's changed clothes. So he's dressed like Arashi from Game Center Arashi.
Right, yeah.
And then
he's just like a cool guy from the 80s. Yes,
yes, all the little kids go, who's that guy who we'd be warned to not hang around with?
Yeah, initially they're kind of wary of him, but then he starts being badass yeah, at the arcade game. So.
By the end of the episode, they're asking to be adopted by him.
Yes.
Father, you can win this game.
dear.
It turns out Yami has some talent, and that is playing Waka Komodo Dragon.
Is that to avoid copyright or something?
I think so, yes.
Probably. But it rolls off the tongue quite nicely, too.
Hmm. I'd never seen the wall version of that before.
No, nor have I. No, nor ones which then expand to reveal extra secret, extra hard versions of them. Mm.
I didn't even know there was a hard version. Yeah, okay.
Well, it's like the Fisted on our Star Punching game, where that's kind of a similar premise. You get hit things that come at you. So,
oh, that thing was sweet, yeah.
Yeah, it was great.
But yeah, this was both a great episode and also had the effect of me really wanting to watch Game Center Arashi. Because I've seen
so effective advertising as well.
All I've really seen is the opening credits and parodies of it, particularly in Haybot, which seems to do it like every fourth week. but yeah, I hadn't realised just how ridiculous the special moves that the main set character does playing arcade machines. Because until I saw what happens here with Ayami.
Yeah, his second special move. The kids are they're impressed by the first one, but the second one they're like, what? That doesn't even make sense. It's like, oh, he's intimidating the Komodos or whatever. You know, they have to reinterpret what it is after what he does. Hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And the punchline of the crane machine.
The test. Yeah.
With all the things wrong with it.
I'm not even sure you can... Like, wasn't there not even a slot for your coin?
That was it. Yes, it was like all the toys was pushed up against the corners, which obviously must be like a real thing. And then they go, it's like the crane doesn't have any claws.
Yeah, and there's nowhere to put your money. So
there's no buttons to operate the crane.
That's right. So it's just like, well, I can't even lose money to this. So what's the problem? But Yami has a secret technique where he like turns into some sort of Buddhist, not Buddhist, Hindu god. With the she stance, because it's the ultimate stance or something.
And the toys just walk out of the machine themselves.
A bloodless victory.
But it turns out this was only in his head. And all he's doing is humping the machine.
He's gone mad because he can't figure this one out. Yeah, and everyone's just super creeped out. Yes. The end.
He was doing so well, and then Chipper and Mr. Flag were like, just trying to ruin
this
his
one's
day.
Impossible, and they're like, "Oh shit, it really is impossible. We've driven him mad." Oh well.
And then we go back to the idols at the Odin stand, getting into all sorts of feuding still. As she gets more and more annoyed at the cat girl posting on Instagram,
Instagramming every fucking step of her meal. Yeah.
Yes. And so, does she throw hot oil on her?
Yeah, I think so.
And then she takes a photo and says, "I found a funny cat."
Hashtag kill yourself or something. Yeah, just being her horrible self. And then they get into another bear fight in the Odin stand.
Yep. I do like the reminders of other characters being as horrible as the brothers. It's like,
Yeah. This is the world of terrible people.
Yeah, because the brothers weren't in the second story at all, I think. Yeah. So that was probably much more like the 80s version of the show. Where Yami and Chipper are the main characters.
It's kind of far enough along as a franchise. Know all these characters enough that they are they're strong enough, they're solid enough to carry a segment by themselves.
Yeah, and as we were saying last week, they can now also start punching holes between the walls of the various versions of the Matsus.
Make their own continuity.
But yeah, I thought this was a really good episode. It might be my favourite one so far, except for the first episode, because that was...
They've done some really good character interactions so far. I like the Charumatsu Ishimatsu thing earlier, but yeah, this one again is just really good. The characters playing off each other and not even going that extreme with it.
Like
there's nothing unrealistic essentially in what they do, including him being like, "Hey, fucking put that thing back after you're done with it," you know. It's just kind of being small, kind of shitty.
Yes, there's no gross out stuff in this episode. I like the gross out stuff as well.
Matsus.
We had all the fusions last week, and then and the previous episode with Yami shitting into a black bag. So, I'm going to keep bringing that up every so often.
Thanks.
Just for Dwayne's sigh whenever it comes up.
God damn it.
Righty ho! Let's go to another show where things are going to be stuck in a black bag after the end of the episode. Inuyashiki! Episode 8, Marry Inuyashiki. It does not go too well for the grandmother and Shion.
Well, it went better than I thought it was going to go.
It did, me too, yes. I thought they were dead, but. Our hero?
My name is
Hero. Different spelling, but.
It manages to get them out before they die and then heal them up.
Well, I think he manages to get them out when they're basically fucking shot up and probably dead. But he flies off crying. He's like, "I'm sorry," and you think they're dead on the fucking ground. But you see them later on. It's like, "Oh, more money showed up in the bank account. You think it was that robot guy?" Yeah, probably.
Who else would it be? A long lost uncle? God.
Yeah, well, at least they're not dead, because they didn't really deserve it. They were wrong to take in a fucking lunatic, but sure, they didn't know. Oh, dear. But yeah, yeah. And he's decided his solution is, well, if the police are going to keep chasing me, I'm just going to kill all the police.
He's going to end the Japanese police, yes.
he goes full on Terminator and just shoots up the entire police station.
He gives your man that's guarding outside a chance. He's like, don't you know who I am? Come on, have a look. There's also talk of a meteor about to hit Earth, so we might be in a One Punch Man type situation.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's Chekhov's asteroid.
Yeah. Because everyone in the scooter's like, oh, we've all forgotten about your men. What the?
No, that's the asteroid alert.
Okay.
I was unconcerned, all the kids at school are and saying, Astro might destroy the Earth. Got double maths after this, though.
Life still goes on, yeah.
And then we have like a segue about Inushiki's daughter and her desire to become a manga creator.
Again, there's some little digs here as probably a real life artist called Oda. It's like, how old is he?
What do you mean? This is in reference to something real now, like a real person.
Like, how old is he? Oh, he looks 35. Oh, he's had loads of surgery done. Just want to let the fans
know. Don't be shitty, dude. That's their business. It's the own person's business if they want to get that done. Don't be shitty about it.
All you care about is money. I'll show you. I'm going to draw a manga that's better than your dad's and better than yours is going to be. And I'll show you what a real manga is. I'm going to build a bigger house in front of your house to block a lot of your light. Now I'll show you, won't it?
yeah. And the kind of thing of the kid and everything, I think she's taken aback by when she says, oh, you're just in it for the money because you want to be rich like your dad. And he's like, it's not about the money. I'm passionate about it. And she's kind of like, what? But I'm passionate about it. I'm going to win a competition. And make it big. Yeah. And her dad actually, like, I don't know, like, it's only after her discovering the dad that he actually kind of supports her.
Yeah.
Because he's a nice guy.
What?
I know, right? It's like, I haven't talked to my daughter in years. It's like, yeah, talk to your dad. He's actually kind of sound out, dude.
But she just have to finish her high school and get good grades before they support her.
I think that's reasonable.
We just get a brief scene with three of the cops, of which two get killed later on.
Yes, well, they're out drinking. It's like, what's the deal with this guy? How come they haven't caught him, et cetera, et cetera.
And then, we get, it's kind of like a mirror of the Yakuza.
Yeah, scene. Especially with the switching off and not near fatal, but fatal wounds this time. Yeah.
But he does leave that one guy wounded.
To tell the tale.
Yes.
Let everybody know who did it.
Tell him it was me.
Well, also, I think it's just that there's somebody, one of the police will be alive to watch him destroy the police.
Yes. Yeah. He needs a witness. Because otherwise, like, he just walked into a place and all the police died in this place for mysterious circumstances. Which is like, he wants people to know it's him kind of thing at this stage. When does the daughter start? Oh, she sees her dad and your man just walking through town, isn't it?
Yeah.
My dad's friends? That seems unlikely. I better
and
get
her
into this.
Imagined scenarios of like, I'll take care of your daughter. I was like, I'm actually gay for young men. And it's like, no, can't be those. It's even weirder than those, I guess. It's a robot. Yeah.
So that's three more episodes left, I do believe.
Where is this show going?
That asteroid.
The asteroid,
obviously, yes. But, I mean, like, the way this kind of cynicism of this, I kind of expect the asteroid to just wipe everyone out. You know, because it's bigger than the impact that killed the dinosaurs or
it
something.
Is, yes, yeah.
So it's just like, it'll just kill all humans. Fuck them. I don't care. Oda's making more money than me anyway. Fucking bullshit.
Yeah. It's always there, like on the sidelines. Because when the SWAT team arrive to shoot up the house, trying to get Hiro, you have the people like gathered outside in the street, and they seem pretty gleeful about this. It's kind of they're gonna get that fucking Shishigami kid who fucking murdered all those families. Yeah. Also,
I'm kind of on their side because he's a mass murderer.
Also, the innocent girl and granny who get gunned down in the head of bullets as well. But it's all the means to an end. Ha ha.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know, dude. I can't tell what side this thing is supposed to be on, you know, that way. It seems really trying to be sympathetic to Hero, but then he shoots up a fucking place full of cops because they're trying to catch him, a murderer. Dear.
Animation-wise, this was a little off-model as well, but again, I think it kind of worked, because it kind of worked with a slightly different animation style in the action of him assaulting the police station.
And just the kind of sheer carnage and murder scene of that, like, again, in contrast to his daughter bumbling around, really crappily detectiving her way through what her dad's up to and what he's about. It's such a contrast, like a freaking, like you said, not like a Terminator or a horror slasher movie. The way he keeps getting back up as well and terrifying the shit out of the cops.
Oh, and that spot where he gets shot in the head by the sniper rifle, that's a great bit of animation as well.
Yeah, yeah.
But also because you as the viewer know how powerful he is, it's like, oh, these guys, don't go and check the body. You see that he's got no wounds.
it's like there's no blood. There's no huge pool of blood after all of you unloading your submachine guns into him. And all the people, like the bystanders, like, how come they're shooting him so much? That's really weird.
The news crew are standing by person. They're sending in wave after wave of SWAT team members to try and take out this
one teenager.
Kid.
Yeah, yeah.
And I would have a problem with characters not being freaked out by his behavior if it wasn't for the fact almost everybody apart from Inu Ishiki in this are so jaded about everything else in life.
Yeah, he seems to be the one nice man on planet Earth. And I'm wondering if they're going to freaking turn that around or something as well.
This robot teenage boy is about to fucking kill me if I shoot me and then blow my brains out in the middle of my skull. But he's not going to pay Adam Wade my damn ex-wife anymore. His wife had to try to toss going through these guys' heads and to get massacred by lasers.
Yeah, I was nearly thinking, were we seeing that guy and his senpai, the older police officer, were we seeing them getting drinking and talking shit about him so that we would feel good that he died? I don't know. What is this show trying to convey?
I don't know, but that's kind of why I like it. I kind of like... It definitely feels like you're getting the author's maladjusted worldview unfiltered.
Fuck young people.
I mean, like, the only way it could be more direct is if he wrote a story that he is in and that he is currently beating the shit out of Oda in or something. You know what I mean? It's just like, just be like, all pretense is gone. It's like, this is what I want to do, me. I am in this story now.
I want to blind him with lasers. Make him think about what he's done. Make him so much money off a great comic. Bastard!
Dear. He should read Gantz.
Now, there's a comic for you. Shades of Grey in that, I tell you what.
Right up. Next up, The Ancient Magus' Bride, Episode 9, None So Deaf As Those Who Will Not Hear, which may have been me watching this because I don't remember much about it. There was... I remember the Selkie thing showing up at the end and hitting them on the heads.
Yeah, there's a lot of different bits in this, but again, the slow pace makes it feel like not much happened.
Yeah, I think I was busy dealing with something else, so I don't think I had to give it my full attention.
Okay.
So someone else give it as a synopsis.
Well, Elias is locked up in his room and we woke him out of it, and the most they're putting it down is initially to, well, he's probably so exhausted after transforming into Big Monster Man last time that it's probably still needs to be kind of resting at next week, get his energy back. So they kind of leave him to it for the most part.
Yeah, I mean, like, a lot of it's Jisei wanted him to open up because he promised he'd explain everything, but she kind of figures that, whether by on purpose or just by his nature, that he kind of keeps a part of what he says isn't true, that he doesn't want to show her the whole him, whereas she wants to see the whole him. There's that scene as well where she's in the room with him, and it's kind of like he's a terrifying monster looming over, but it's also kind of like this weird intimacy kind of thing from her point of view. Yeah. That was a good one. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, kind of before that as well, like, no, Silky thinks it's best to get these two out of the house for a while, so she gives him here's some
money.
You and Ruth, just head off and let's have a nice day out. Let's get out of the house. I'm trying to fucking make dinner and sweep around. Just you fucking under my feet all the time. So just get out of here.
Like, I think she said, inverted commas, said the most in this episode by writing a note into the wallet that she handed them.
Yeah.
And also by standing outside the bedroom, like, with a hammer, smacking it into her hand. He's like, in case anything untoward is tried, I assume.
Mm-hmm. And they were into Angelica on the way out. Then they kind of, hey, you're going to town? Sure, I'll tip in with you. And they're kind of have a nice afternoon in a small English village.
There's a big brackets. Long extended shopping sequence, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. You get them getting on the bus, looking at the cheese shop, you know, all the kind of things. But Angelica's basically asking, like, she's like, how is she getting on top of that now? And, you know, and it's just kind of saying, look, I know this guy came along and he helped you out, but you shouldn't get that much involved in me. Like, you gotta do you as well, you know?
Yeah.
And she says, getting like a little bit sort of like, almost kind of aggressive or kind of very kind of agitated at that remark. And
yeah.
Not quite sure why it's something kind of very rooted still in her past trauma, and it's kind of a notable thing. It's kind of notable, I think, that she kind of gets this kind of agitated, and then she's like, "Oh, I'm sorry, I'll be good, I'm sorry, don't mind me." And I think that's obviously something that kind of bubbling up from her past, whatever kind of abuse she kind of went through as a kid is
still ingrained in her pretty deeply. Whatever way she used to cope for that, yeah.
Yeah, so she's kind of like afraid to kind of get angry or maybe kind of be assertive because it's still, I guess, lingering in her.
We've seen a lot of like positive emotions kind of bubble up in her, and we've seen her smile, like that kind of thing. And I think she's kind of getting worried about those negative emotions coming through as well, because up to this point she's been kind of keeping herself flat in order to probably avoid the negative. Whereas with the positive, you get those very bad ones as well, which, yeah, again, there's another scene in this which makes reference to it. And it's like, yeah, she still has to deal with a lot of that, a lot of that trauma.
And you go home then, and then, like, you know, just thinking back on that, then pops to open a door and go into Alice's room, and he's still in kind of Monster Man form, and he's not quite fully has his full wits about him again. But she kind of, you know, still goes this kind of rolls this kind of, and she's kind of surprised at this herself, because like it's kind of weird how I've gotten used to this so quickly. And have that kind of, yeah, it's that strange sort of embrace. She's sort of, even though he's in this kind of indescribably horrific form, she's still she still sees him inside her somewhere. It's
still him to her, so it doesn't phase her.
Yeah, but she does goes off on like a, well, he, Elias, goes off on like a runner again, just leaves a note, he's gone in the morning, says, "No, I'll be back later," and then she's kind of, fuck's sake, she goes out with Roots and just kind of strolls around to see he signs him, and just like walking by one of the neighbors' houses, and they say, "Oh, it's the old man who has a lovely garden." Oh, don't know if he knows, but he's got a fairy, like, you know, right on his shoulders there. Does he know about this? Yeah.
So she decides to have a like talk with this guy while Ruth keeps looking. It's kind of like a distraction from the main thing, but it obviously relates to her relationship with Elias as well.
Yeah,
kind of you get the reversal, the fairy or the creatures to the humans' point of view. You kind of get through this in a similar vein.
Yeah. Anyways, the fairy in here is a Aladdin she. It's like basically a beautiful lady who from the fairy world who takes a human lover and is supposed to provide him with kind of inspiration and talent in exchange for their devotion
and blood.
well, the blood thing only can happen later on because, like, it was Yates who actually kind of drew the line between. Hey, this could be kind of vampire-like creatures as well, aren't they?
It's a similar kind of, I think that was taken later, but it's kind of like the suggestion that she should be feeding on this guy and giving him talent, but she's not. She's just being with him, and. It even kind of comes up that he writes in his spare time and she reads his kind of story, and it's more so like a literal telling of a thing that happened to him rather than this divinely inspired thing. Again, she's not influencing him here. She just wants to be with this guy, even though as a magical creature, she doesn't quite understand why.
Different, two different worlds would never work.
That's never happened in fiction. No way.
Mm. Well, because of Chisa's presence there, the old lady is able to get like, you know, a kind of brief glimpse of Len and she again, and a kind of another little thing where, you know, Chisa, if she otherwise hadn't been there, wouldn't have had this beautiful moment again. So once again, you know, she's changing lives out there, wherever, in small little ways like this. But anyways, Elias is found. He's like, he's somewhere deep in the forest, and like Chisa runs over there to try to find what the hell is going on. He's kind of halfway inside the pond, and he's like, "What the fuck are you doing here?" "Oh, I'm just resting. I came here to cover myself." And she finally kind of lets him have it, and saying, "Look, I know you've done a lot for me. You've fun taking me into your home. You've given me the care, whatever weird it is, I never really got for most of my life. But you can't just fucking run off and not tell me shit like this anymore, all right? You know?"
He's like, "I left a note." He's very like, what's her name's ma'am? It's just like, if I leave a note, it's fine. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not quite enough.
It's like, you know, like I know, like, you made your reasons, your kind of ways, but it's, no way, it was okay before, but it's not okay anymore. We've fucking been through a lot of things happening right now. I saw you turn into a giant monster man, and you still were, like, up until yesterday, and I'm not sure why that is. Like, what's up with you? Is that really you? Is this really you? What's going on with this fucking thing? It's like, okay, I understand. I'm a bit of a weirdo like that. I just ask you to be patient with me, please. I promise I'll be better with you in the future. It's like, yeah.
I'll get to it, but I can't explain it all right now. Yeah.
Yeah. This is good, yeah. This is like a nice pivotal moment in their strange relationship.
Yeah.
But like, again, she's growing as a person, you know. It's not all about being kind of positive and kind of lovey-dovey and being nice with her. It's also, you know, kind of finding, you know, the strength and strength of to be other ways, like being more sort of and calling out fucking bullshit behavior when you see it.
Yeah, and it's kind of like trying to get her into these uncomfortable feelings as well, because that's part of being a fully formed person, that kind of thing.
Yeah. I guess it's kind of she's maybe trying to kind of bury any fucking negativity, because she's already had enough of that in her life. No, she's trying to maybe focus on what's happening around her. But again, it's kind of inner nature to kind of maybe focus on the bad things as well. Wouldn't say she's kind of still has a fairly kind of fatalistic outlook, I suppose.
Yeah. I mean, like, that might just be her. That might be her, one of her coping mechanisms kind of thing. But I do like the way this show takes the time to let characters have these complicated feelings and try and work through them.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, not actually, I guess not that much happens in the episode, but it's kind of like it's standard kind of slow pace. Even though there's like several scenes and everything, it feels like it's quick and slow at the same time. It's difficult to describe.
I always said they did pack a lot in there. Probably because not a lot kind of happens, but say in the kind of like the kind of day to day sometimes.
Yeah,
I like how now this is just moved ahead. You know, like a few weeks have passed between this episode and the last one, and it's like, there would have been like a lot of days of them, just, you know, downstairs having tea, but he's upstairs in his room, still like recuperating, whatever the hell he's doing up there. So it's like, oh, yeah, it's kind of just scoot along to the point we needed to go to.
Check in with some of the old characters, like the one who worked in the alchemist shop and the priest.
Yeah, the priest.
Nobody still wants to talk to.
it's like you're getting to be. You're trying to hang around that guy too much. You're just like being very brusque and brief, and just running off after you've got what you want. I mean,
yeah.
At least fucking say hello and ask how I'm doing. You know, come on. I think it's still trundling along very well. Like I just keep saying it. Well, it was probably more like noticeable this time, where when a lot of things happened, it felt to feel like a really kind of blitz by. It ends as well, but like another communique from Elias's teacher in Iceland, and say, "Hey, come to Iceland, got some dragon stuff going on.
Yeah, and that's where the Selkie pops in.
Mm. Yeah, it looks a bit like something out of Zatch Bell.
Yeah, I suppose.
Little cute thing, yeah.
A cute blobby thing, yeah.
That is, I believe, Lindell's familiar.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah,
I think they say it in the script, don't they? Yeah, I'd seen the start, I'd seen the end, I'd seen bits in the middle, but I think I had to leave the room at some point, probably take a delivery that I missed.
You might have just missed the shopping sequence, so...
Yeah.
It's just like the musical number and stuff, which was nice, but it was kind of like, ah, now for a nice cam bit.
Ronnie Hoon, Land of the Lustrous, guys, while you're taking charge.
Okay, are you up on this, Dwayne? Did you watch it?
Yep. I didn't. I only kind of covered like the sweet actiony parts of the last episode.
Sweet actiony parts, but also this fucking
tragedy,
destroying heartbreak of it all.
And the episode 9 spring kind of compounds that again.
Yeah,
where you're not just seeing like a character. For lack of a better term, with these immortal fucking crystalline beings, a death of a character in the prior one, but in this one, it's like you can see the character slowly being eroded away, which is nearly worse. Yeah.
Well, for a rock, yeah, that's it's actually very.
I wasn't
fitting,
going for
it?
That pun, but yeah.
Yeah. But I think this is maybe. Well, it's kind of building towards, because there's been a lot of people saying, oh, Foz keeps fucking up. Like, when are they going to get their act together? And
asking her to not be her, and that's what's fucking happening to her now.
Them. Remember,
sorry. Gender neutral.
They don't. But they don't
a gender neutral pronoun in English, goddammit.
They don't even they don't even call them in show. They call them in show as, you know, as them or they.
They use that the pluralization as gender neutral.
I'd say stick with them anyway.
Yeah, you're right.
Well, that obviously is kind of responding to that. Was like, yeah, Foz fucked up like enough times, and you know, and it was fine. But it's only when somebody basically got killed over it that maybe they had to think about checking their behavior a bit. And this obviously had an effect on them. When we see Foz next, they look quite different. They've trimmed the hair or whatever that.
Yeah,
is around their heads, they want
to
call it.
Foz says that they like took the parts of the hair to replace some of the parts that they've missed. Because obviously, you know, so now they have gold arms and the shell legs, and everyone's really impressed with the gold arms and they're really fucking cool. But and they're actually, because it's not just in her arms; it's actually seeping through her whole person, and everyone comments that they're much bigger. But because it's basically like it mends the gaps in her kind of fragile nature. So it's really working out for her, but I said her again, damn it. But Foz is like not the same personality. There's bits of it that come through again and bits where Foz is trying to play it off as really light and trying to joke, but it's coming across as like nearly unemotional and kind of robotic, you know? That's horrible to see.
Well, yeah, it's like at the start of this now, it's just like, you know, like, it's still like kind of, it's just at the end of winter and it's just Foz and the Master going around taking care of stuff. And Foz is just kind of like, Foz, you kind of feel it's kind of just going through the motions of things, really. But they've obviously really internalized everything that's happened. Happened with Antarcticite, and they're just trying their best to kind of keep it in, and you know, and not let anything, not let it kind of show that this has affected them so deeply. But like, and obviously, he has like shedding tears of gold, you know, at the first sunrise of spring and all that kind of thing, being very useful.
Yeah. And the Master seems to know some of what's going on and is even providing like some kind of comedic relief distraction by being the idol of all these gems kind of thing, so that Foz can sort their shit out. But yeah, you can see that he seems to know something.
Yeah.
He recognizes tears as something that organic beans in the past, a flaw in them or something, he says. Yeah.
Yeah. Is this very this fucking bittersweet? Like Foz has this incredible ability now. They're basically the T-1000, but in their arms, they can just, like, you know, form knives and stabbing weapons and
like raise themselves up on a elevator, create a giant shield of gold and platinum.
Yeah.
But the kind of thing where it's like, oh, would you, Foz, would you wake up Cinnabar? And it's like, who? And I was just like, oh no.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Foz does remember some of what they wanted to promise Cinnabar, but the fact that they didn't, it took him a second to realize it was just, that was heartbreaking, because yeah. You can just see their personality being eroded away.
Yeah, like they've got the ability, they've got the strength to fight like they always wanted to, but now to do is just, now it's just a job. It's just something that I do now.
And you've, Diamond commenting, or sorry, not Diamond, what's the other kind of diamond?
Bort.
Bort. you've Bort commenting. It's like, are you happy that you're strong now? And apparently that's going to come up in the next episode, because you can see Bort's kind of thinking, it's like, this isn't right. I know I've been on Foz's case about this, but this seems wrong. It irks her in some regard, and I'm just kind of curious what way.
Yeah. And when Foz does eventually meet Cinnabar, Cinnabar can just cop immediately, like, what's been kind of going on. And
there's very little of the Foz that she knew before. Yeah.
That they knew before. And it's like, you've changed, man. Used to be about you being a big fuck up, but now you're confident, you know, and that's the difference. You've changed, man. You've forgot about me, haven't you? Now you've gotten your phone fancy new abilities. It doesn't really matter what you're about. It was all about you. It was never about finding something for me. It was all about something about you. So you've got what you wanted. So see you later. Or not. I don't know. That's what's going to happen, man.
I'm really curious as to where it's going, and I hope not just the complete ruining of Foz as a character. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, kind of, in a way, Foz had like a different object of devotion now, removed from Cinnabar, but in the entire sense, still kind of sleeps at the foot of the sleeps at the foot of literal foot that we have. That's all that's left of Antarctica site, and has like nightmares about them as well. So, yeah, it's a very bittersweet, very melancholy. I think
it's even played up more with the other gems, kind of looking at Foz like this exciting new thing, and they're all either interested or want to dissect Foz, or they all have their own interests in Foz. But the lack of personality is really jarring in comparison to what we're used to. Yeah.
Yeah, but I like that though, and I like as well just the other reactions from the rest of the gems to that. No, because it did help to break up a little bit of that atmosphere for a little while.
Yes.
But yeah, this is really pulling me in. I already liked it, and in spite of some of the maybe the repetition things going on, I was still very engrossed in the world and the way it kind of worked, and just the nature of these beings themselves. But now I'm just fully just engrossed and immersed in what's going on and everything going on. I really, really like it. It's already kind of a little kind of a fond, a very kind of fondness for it that I'm not sure that a lot of people shared as well, but I think a lot of folks have been kind of coming around to this as well, and I couldn't be happier for it. It's like, yeah, this is really great.
It seems to be actually like, taking it to a place rather than talking about this interesting world and this interesting setup. There is actually an end goal, and you can see what the kind of plan is or what the things they want to talk about are. Yeah.
Yeah, it feels like, you know, it is like addressing some of the questions and concerns that people have had, you know, watching up to this far, or watching or reading or do whatever they're taking it in up to this point. And then, yeah, we are going to like get to this. Just give us a little time, and we will. And they do. And maybe it's not what you wanted now. Well, all this time for Foz to be competent, to be, you know, stop being screwed up so much, and now they're not. And now it's something completely different. Maybe not what you wanted to begin with. So are you happy? Are you happy now?
It's kind of
like you know, in Metal Gear Solid 4, when everyone hated Raiden in Metal Gear Solid 2, and then bringing back is this like super cool cyborg ninja, and he's like, but he lost his humanity, lost his family, and it's just like, and then he gets killed, or she's get killed, like, you know, partway through, and it's like, there! He's fun, had a super heroic ending, and after he'd fun talking shit about him the rest of the time, well, you're happy now, he's dead.
Yeah, except to see the character go through a slow death nearly in this episode. Yeah, it's interesting that, and maybe that's one of the things they were trying to set up with making you not like Foz. Enjoyable.
Good show.
Anything to report on Garrow? Are you still watching Garrow?
Yes. Again, did you talk about it a bit last week, Dwayne?
Mostly the sweet werewolf robot, well, werewolf knight suit man fights, which were pretty cool last week.
this one, the episode 9, setting off, was similarly melancholy because
it's dealing with the fallout from it. Because even you have your man like looking at the city, is like, "Whew, I better not go crazy like that again." In the ruins of the fucking city that he wrestled another wolf nightman to.
Or rather, he won't allow it to. It's like, no fun.
Yes.
He's not dumb with me, and I'm a dumb with him. So he'll come back again. So I'm not going to allow this to happen. So I'm going to fucking go to him. I'm going to where he is and sort him out there. But as well, like, you've gotten the all clear. Like, look, Sophie is involved in this, and it's probably for the best because she's being targeted by this El Dorado organization. It would be better if she was with somebody who could protect her from any kind of further incursion. So we gotta send you like out west to probably track down these other guys and meet up with some whatever other dudes. So you take her with her. I take her with you there. And as well, it could be good for her to get away from the city for a while. She's been through a fucking hell of a lot in the last day or two.
Yeah, a lot of it's her ignoring and trying to come to terms with all the shit that she's went through.
And just hopping on the bike and just heading out the city, you know, kind of into, looks kind of like, I don't know, kind of a dry kind of Western America, like California or your Arizona or something like that.
This is a completely different world from ours, right? Because they do mention it's like, oh yes, that's a lawless area that we don't control. And I was like, wait, I thought this was the U.S.
No, well, if you look at the map,
when you see the map,
like, you know, they get shown where you're supposed to meet up with these guys. The landscape was completely off, so it's some other fantasy America setting. But lobby, it's just kind of just them on the roads and the stopping off in diners, and you know, and there's a big kind of like musical montage, but it's just like over them just cruising around. They find like a hurt deer, and it's like, get sword, so we gotta take care of this hurt deer.
like oh, there's no help with that. We could eat it. I could eat one of my mammoth steaks, maybe out of it.
But then like the cat nurses it back to health, but then the deer's mother comes along, and then it's like, you know, oh, but I love that little deer. Even give it like a little name, and then it's gone again.
And it's kind of the thing of
the sense of loss washes over her again.
She has no mother figure to come help her because her mother figure got fucking murdered. That kind of thing.
It's just very nice. It's nice to this, like, is a show like this, which is about a big, meaty guy called Sword, who kills monsters with a sword. We'll take a whole episode out to deal with the grief of this young girl who had her life completely upended, and her guardian maternal figure killed in front of her eyes by a demon knight.
Yeah, it makes me like Sword a little more, because, again, big meathead and everything, but his ring guy keeps saying, he's like, hey, she's slowing us down, dude. And he's like, yeah, it's fine, don't worry about it. And he's just trying to let her process everything she's been through. It's like, she needs enough time, you know.
Yeah, he's trying to be like a cool big brother as well, and it's definitely the thing to try, like, you know, fill the sibling gap that they both have experienced, you know.
Yeah,
they're gonna be each other's, like, no kind of surrogate siblings now.
Yeah
Unfortunately, and, as you described in the episode of them driving around, going to diners, I did put into my head the idea of him being the Garrow version of Guy Fieri.
That's really been ticking off lately for every little thing where somebody is either photoshopping or just finding characters wearing the flame t-shirts.
Is that right?
It doesn't help that he sleeps in his underpants, I guess.
yeah.
But yeah.
it actually reminded me like more of the musical montage bit of that the one episode of Space Dandy, where his bounty is that alien girl, but
oh yes, the worst
separated
episode of the
from series. From granddad. Yeah, but that scene was still kind of nice and heartfelt, anyway. But it's not entirely just like all about kind of melancholy and sadness, and then coming to terms with it. At the very end, you get to see, I guess, the El Dorado headquarters and the other weirdos who Knight works with.
That's their theme.
Yes.
I'm now looking up the phrase "anime Guy Fieri" on Google Images, and
oh no,
it's as bad as you'd expect.
Yeah.
Righty-ho, back to things I've actually watched. Where were we? Oh, it must be Blood Blockade Battlefront, Episode 9, Desperate Fight in the Macro Zone, Part 2. In which, is it Real?
Real is a big guy.
Yeah. He's grown super big, and the world's largest individual has stepped up to take care of him.
I'm glad fucking that was, well, I predicted from the ending fucking credits thing, but I really love the scene where you kind of cuts to the populace and they're just having like a barbecue on the roof going like, yeah. Ooh, our homeboy.
Taking bets on it. It's like everyone going, hey, come on, watch a big fight. Where is it? Just look out your window, you'll see it.
They live in Hell Salem's lot and shit like this goes down all the time. Oh, yeah. Might as well make a parody out of it.
Yeah, and also I like the phrase the world's largest individual. Almost just that one phrase gives you an idea of how tolerant everybody is in Hell Salem's lot.
Yeah, politically correct way to put it.
Yes, because everything's out the window at this point.
Well, I thought of it as well, okay. Now, is this the biggest individual, or you know, we're not counting kind of weird hive mind colony beings who are many things that comprise one large organism?
Yes,
yeah. I tell on that line as well.
he's the largest single. Yeah.
But then the army shoots Real, and he gets even bigger, and he just goes, turns around and runs away.
Everyone disgusted. They were betting on the home team.
Yeah. Yeah, and we get constantly getting cuts to the werewolf bureau on the girls' night out.
Oh, that's good.
The best bit is when
one person you need for this job is getting fucking plastered.
When she smashes the phone.
What is it, like die bacon demon because she spilled some bacon on her phone
or
something?
Yeah, raw ham demon is what, yeah.
That was it, yeah.
That's happened, like, you know, and then, like, you know, well... I don't like it like later on because it's Zap just talking shit again. But you know, like even Steven's going, now where were you all this time? And was all getting drunk with my friends. It's my night off. Come on.
One thing we needed you for. What was the drinking game they were playing? I couldn't determine the rules. They had to say something.
I meant to go back and watch it. I thought they were just playing from Thumbs game.
I was wondering if they were just getting the newbie and just saying like, you lost. You have to give the next round. Another round. You know, kind of thing.
Yes.
I wasn't sure if they were like actually playing a game or just trying to get free drink out of the newbie.
It's probably some wordplay in there that I might understand at first watch. I meant to go back and check, but I didn't have time to.
Clearly, they are very well paid, though, because they managed to drink an entire wine cellar between the five of them.
Well, we've seen how much she can put away on her own, so yeah.
Which means it's up to a monkey to save the day.
A monkey, a microscopic being, and the kid who everyone thinks is shite.
It's actually the best.
Yes.
And the butler's flying them around in some sort of fucking drone car, which is great.
And Real stops moving because he realizes this isn't what he wanted. He's been taken advantage of by this criminal. He just wanted to be a little... He wanted to be tough like his mate Leo, but not like this.
But Leo was tough in a different way, not just being super huge.
Yeah, he'll headbutt a dude, even though he'll have
and
run
then
away.
Run away.
That was a great kind of thing to their friendship, because you know, it's like, hey, it's Leo's friend, that guy who you've never seen. And the flashback made it feel kind of more real.
Yeah.
You know?
But yeah, also like the headbutt and running away, it definitely feels like Zap rubbing off. Leo learning some of the wrong lessons from hanging around with Zap all that time.
Yeah.
It's a survival. Top city out there. I'll eat you alive if you give it a chance.
But that bit where Eel breaks his arm catching the baseball is, oh, that is so, the noise and the dangling.
Just, it dangling there, because it's like, oh, he saved Sonic. It's like, oh, no.
And so basically it's a race against time for them to get in there, disable the whatever method he used
growth
to make.
Germ?
Yeah, something like that. And before the bad guy takes over the body using some sort of neuro link up.
Yeah, he's like, I'm going to go straight into your nerves and control your body. Don't worry, you'll still feel yourself crushing millions of people. Because he's been a real dick.
He is, yeah.
I did like the guys going like, okay, we'll distract him. And they're just like all of them putting their ultimate attacks into like his little toe. And he's just like, what's going on down there?
Yes.
Whatever. I'm not going to fight them.
Telling JJ, oh, you can attack from far away. She's like, well, he's that big. It doesn't really matter. I can't really get far away from him.
What? One step and he's on me. Like, fucking pointless. Yeah.
And yeah, they managed to do it because they're the heroes.
They've put a limitation on Leo's power as well, which is his eyeballs get really hot the more he leaves it on, and also he's linking three of them at once.
Yes, I like the way the little germ guy goes, oh, I can see myself.
Wait, you've never seen a mirror before.
Mirrors don't work at that level, maybe.
And then we get Zap chewing out Chain for a change, but and then they point out, hey, you weren't even there.
You were in hospital again. What were you in hospital for? Was it starting this whole mess?
Yes.
Oh yeah, it was actually. Thanks, Zap, you fuck.
Let's kick his ass again.
Yeah, and I think he's back in the hospital at the end of the episode. Man, they must have good healthcare in Hell Salem's Lot.
Oh, yeah, they got that hospital.
Oh, they got that sweet demon hospital.
On the dimensions.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, and he's wondering where his friend is, because last we saw him, he was shrinking, falling over into the pit.
Yeah, because I thought he was just going to crush the entire city, but obviously, yeah, he falls in the hole, negating any of that. But
then he
accidentally
steps
on. I wonder where my friend is. Steps on him.
Yes.
I'm here, Leo. I got smaller. Dies. Not really.
Gets flown off. A bird flies off. I did like they have to put the coda in to say that, yes, he was found in hospital. He was okay, recovering.
Yeah. I really like how that was like what a happy ending. And then like just ripping the piss out of him getting stepped on, him getting taken off by a bird. And it's just like, happy ending, everyone. He's fine, I guess. Yeah, that was pretty funny.
And next week it's Bratatat Mum.
KK episode.
KK, why do I call it JJ? It's KK. I got JJ and James on my brain.
Oh, I thought you meant JJ style.
No.
KK Mum, which I presume this would be how they work in that short story where she tries to get the perfect birthday card for her kid.
That would fit pretty well, unless they got another multi.
And gets in a gunfight, of course.
Yeah. Obviously.
It looks like it's got some Steven stuff as well, so. We still don't know why she hates Steven.
Maybe we'll find out.
Yeah, maybe. Or maybe we won't. Maybe there'll be an eternal mystery never resolved.
That's entirely possible.
Always for money. Or something something petty.
Next Dark Horse volume is out soon, I do believe. I've got it on pre-order. Let me have a quick look. Volume 8... It is apparently out already.
Just in time for Christmas.
Yes, apparently it was out last week, according to Amazon. But Amazon did not have it in stock yet. Temporarily out of stock, it says. Right, so hopefully that'll get to me before Christmas. Though I'm getting piled under with parcels at the moment.
Oh, that's good, though.
It is good. Some of its stuff I ordered, like, 2 months ago, so I'm finally getting a hold of it. But
coming home to roost.
Other stuff is me actually living out the real £100 anime collection.
Oh, you didn't, did you?
No, it's just that by accident, he says. No, it's due to those all the anime sale which is going on at the moment.
Right.
So of the first 3 days, the second and third day I actually bought it from them. The first day it was the Escaflowne big box set, and I was like, it's too expensive. But I wonder if on Amazon if it's cheaper. I hadn't realised they'd released a standard edition of just the TV series on Blu-ray.
Oh.
I'm not really interested in getting the film. And I was like, it's below £30. Bingo, bango, grab that. Not knowing that the very next day it was... on either day two or three, there was... I think day two was the Masaki Yuasa set, where for £29, you got Tatami Galaxy on Blu-ray. And Ping Pong on Blu-ray. And a Lou Over the Wall poster. And a Nighty Short Walk On Girl poster. And while I've got Ping Pong already, that price alone I was willing to pay for Tatami Galaxy for. So I can shove Ping Pong on eBay and get rid of it that way. And then the next day it was Genius Party and Genius Party Beyond on Blu-ray for £25. So,
mamma mia.
If I spend another £18, that's my £100 anime collection. And there are still things they've got that I would buy if they're below £30. So, I'm hoping they don't appear, so I won't be tempted. Because I also had to pay for the Twin Peaks box set as well this month. Though, thankfully, the pre-order had dropped by almost £14, so... But hold on, enough to this talk. We've still got two more anime shows to talk about. The thing I've written the most notes on is Magical Circle Guru Guru.
Not surprising, yeah.
Episode 21, Revived Demon King Giri. In which we return to the plot of the comic, or the jokes of the comic to be precise, because the plot of the comic was still intact last week. It was just the jokes weren't there. They learned from Gipple that... has Giri been revived or is about to be revived?
He has been revived?
Has been.
Yes.
Because the other villains are like, oh shit, I better get my stuff together. Because they're all going to the revival party.
That's it, yes. They're going to they're flying on the UFO when they meet the eye patch wearing demon who's flying on a dragon.
Yeah.
Who quickly sells out all the other bad guys when his dragon flies off.
Needs a lift. Yeah. Like, to the
leaves
party.
Him on the UFO. So sneak into the party. But spotted when Adberg points them out, who apparently can just pass as a monster without any disguise.
He's pretty weird looking. I think that's understandable. It's like, that guy's probably a monster, because what are the odds that that's an actual old man in a grass skirt dancing?
And he becomes more monster-like as the episode goes on.
Yep, he levels up.
So they're fleeing, and then G-Fantasy show up.
Yeah!
Like, I try to remember the plot of this episode, and I can't not think of G-Fantasy and just them.
They're so fucking great. Yeah, they are such a great idea.
Yeah.
Is it 60 years like... they've been together as, like, an adventuring party or something?
Yeah. God. Because I was thinking, you know the way, like, the thing of, D&D shit, where someone brings back their legacy character kind of thing? It reminded me of that. Imagine you did that, but you kept doing it. And it's just like, no, they're too old now. It's like, nope, they're just so as cool. good as they've ever been.
So, yes, G-Fantasy are four super ripped granddads. I'm guessing a thief, a fighter, a monk, and a cleric, I'm guessing, from their dress. We don't really know because they don't really do anything apart from cool poses.
And not even cool poses.
Yes.
But, yeah.
We get an idea of them when they do their version of their group cool pose called Cool Guys, and they get like a little bit of their anime
cool
intro.
Oh, they make it into a different RPG for a bit with the little pop-up painted pictures. They're fucking... One of them fucking subtitled, and I was like, that's beautiful. He's cool but rude. And I was like, yes! This is great.
These grandpas live dangerously. Their overwhelming strength has seen them undefeated for 60 years.
Shit.
Where were we? Then they're on the run, and they meet a tribe of troglodyte people.
Yeah.
Who
want to get them into their restaurant, I think.
Yes.
Isn't it?
Yeah, into the restaurant, but G Fantasy, all the food. There's a monster. There's Adberg shows up, and he's now gone Super Saiyan Blue.
He's gone Super Saiyan. In the comic, I wonder if he went Super Saiyan, and now he's gone Super Saiyan Blue.
I think you're correct.
The
yes. Yeah.
Oh, that's beautiful. Because he's shouting the magic phrase, so he doesn't forget it, so he can tell them the.
Yes.
What's it? It's something to do with Geary. It's a password or something?
Something like that, yeah.
And shouting it and running across the landscape has apparently leveled him up to Super Saiyan Blue. And I don't know if he has infinity legs or just his legs keep spinning around his body to keep him flying now. It's difficult to tell. He's weird looking.
Yes. Mm. And they mistake him for the hero. So they take him to meet their master.
Oh, the Water King, yeah.
Yes, who's not impressed and so doesn't train him. Then they have a bath, Nikkei and Kukri. Mm. Then we cut back to the Monster City with the nice monsters. I can't remember his name now.
Alhabica.
Yeah, and Juju is bored, so she lets herself get kidnapped.
Yeah, by what is it? Like a sorcerer in a box or something?
Yeah, I think that's what he describes himself as.
Mm. Like she could have easily taken out this guy, but it's just something to do.
Toma and Adamski pursue her in their skyship. There's a joke somewhere around here I really like where Kukri's complaining about going off on an adventure in her bikini and then decides that it was perfectly fine.
Yeah, because obviously Niga's perving on her.
It's so hot that she's fine wearing this after all.
Yeah, yeah.
Rage shows up in Battle Armor, which must be a parody of something specific, some mecha.
Yeah, yeah. The spikes, I figure, have to be like a specific thing. But he thinks they're all going to be really impressed by it, but they're distracted by Toma's flying airship thing.
Yes, which is not as impressive, but does have a cannon.
It does.
Got lasers.
Kukri gets knocked off a cliff, but the bath that... place that made your hair light and fluffy allows you to fly.
Yes.
And Nikkei to hit you with his various different kinds of body hair that I guess he's a growing boy now.
Yes.
Gross.
He holds back on the ultimate move.
Yes. Puberty is hit and puberty hits back.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, there's a pretty great gross joke at the end of that.
Mm.
And yeah, they defeat him. There's more pink bomb. Raid really can't fight Kukri anyway, because he's so infatuated. And Juju has been taken to some ruins that will get explored next week.
Hmm.
I think that's the plot points covered, but as always, loads of gags stuck in between.
Oh god, so many.
I mean, I like last week, but I much prefer it when it's like this, when it's trying to cram every single joke from the comic in and add more jokes on top of that.
Hmm.
This G-Fantasy could have been just the episodes like end to end, but they were just
they're not even the main fucking thing. Yeah
able to get that in into the first half, and maybe for the best, because they're really good, but just even better because you only can find this little section and you might never see them again. If I see them again for the end, but still,
they're the kind of idea that's so fucking good I would love a show about them, but I feel like it's the joke wouldn't spread enough.
You don't
that's
want
it.
A show about them. They're just goop and
I feel
just,
like I do.
Mm. When I added something else and they just enhance it.
Yes.
See, I had a D&D campaign where I did have a band of NPC adventurers who were like a boy band, but they weren't a geriatric boy band. I hadn't realized I could have taken it one step further.
They've been doing this for a while.
Yes.
Yeah. My favorite bit of that was your man like jumping up at this giant monster and like moving his hands and really fast, and he lands back down and it's like he didn't do anything to the monster. It's like, no, my butt was really itchy, so I jumped up and scratched it really quick.
The monster was fine, it's just he's just walking around on mine.
That's just a regular monster, don't worry about it. And I was just like, god damn, these guys suck. All they do is comment and ruin everything. They don't actually do anything useful to the plot, I guess.
Except make it much funnier.
Yes, that is vital.
But yeah, I have to expect that the team call pose to pay off at some point in the future.
Yeah, with the amount of characters that we have, sure.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, all good fun. It's coming to a close. I think we're about halfway through, or more than halfway through, the 14th volume. So there's only two more volumes after this to adapt.
Hmm.
But then, of course, currently running is Magical Circle Guru Guru 2 manga. So at some point in the future, they could probably do more.
Or should we wait for the second time they do it? Or...
Yes, yeah. Possibly, that might be advisable. Right, final thing today is Dragon Ball Super, episode 118, Accelerated Tragedy, Vanishing Universes. An episode which kills off two entire universes, this was really funny in places.
Yeah, they keep it light, but it's still like, bye, we're dead now, even though it's like, see you guys later, everyone dies. And I was just like, okay. Odd way to end such a fun episode. Yeah,
again, bittersweet.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's coming up a lot this week.
I think it works really well that it then leads into the character who hasn't really been featured in the episode and his reaction to the tragedy and it pissing him off, and that being Vegeta. So maybe we'll see him
taking it out on folks. Yeah,
get into Ultra Instinct.
I'll give this episode it as well. I was like, what the fuck are those Namek's going to do? And then they did something. I was like, holy shit, that's actually really fucking cool.
Yeah, lots of stuff. there's biding their time at the cunning old Piccolo-like Namek's there.
They're trying to metastasize or whatever fucking terms they use. All Namek's.
Well, no. They've done that already.
But they hadn't gotten the hang of it yet. Yeah.
Yeah, because they hadn't actually had that much time to prepare, had they? If I remember, because going back, it was like a day, or was it 40 hours or something?
Oh, yeah, it was not even 2 days or something like that.
So, yeah, that makes sense that they wouldn't have had time to properly
fuse. Yeah, Yuichi would agree to this, have their essence fused into this, and, you know, then the main guy, he's like, you know, he's the one who's on top here. So, essentially, you will cease to exist. You live on within the guy, but... Eventually, we're still kind of gone.
Yes.
So to find 20 guys each or whatever that the one who would beat that like within 24 hours, it's pretty good going.
Yeah. And also, I guess in Universe 7, there's only ever been two fighting Namek's as well, technically. But you do even have friggin' Kami and Nail kind of show up in ghostly form in this one, which is really nice. Good stuff.
And then meanwhile in Universe 2, the three remaining guys from there transform into magical girls.
Yeah, magical boys.
with the same name / rhyming fucking thing and the same suits. Oh, it's wonderful.
Yes.
And everyone in their entire universe, this is being broadcast, which must be terrifying for them, right? But they seem into it.
They're getting the glow sticks out. They're supporting their faves.
Yeah, and thanks to DigiCarrot on Twitter for pointing out that this is a parody of the Pretty Cure movies where they hand out glow sticks to the audience so they can cheer on.
Oh, the magical girls. Clap your hands and get that Care Bear stare going.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
And so much then makes me wonder if the three guys turning into magical girls are a reference to people who aren't the other fan base for Pretty Cure, who aren't the original target fan base.
Oh, like the ones who are passionate about it but clearly are not represented by it.
Guys like me, for instance, who is, you know, nascent but still very much into it.
Okay.
So that goes well. And I like that they sort of admit the power of love, but Goku has always preferred the power of guts, which is a great, just like a nice simple phrase which distinguishes this and Toei Magical Girl shows. It's like, this is what Dragon Ball is all about.
Some good bits. I think one of my favorite bits was the androids getting into playing the villains. Goku being crap at that.
Yes, and
I'm android
Goku,
android 18. The pain of dream, the gas to defeat the love gas of universe 2. I am Goku. How's it going?
Am I doing it? Am I villaining? No. good stuff.
But they also comment about how he didn't go Ultra Instinct this time because it's going to take a higher... The bar has been raised at what it's going to take to turn him Ultra Instinct.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm. Which may also mean that he's getting better when he's not Ultra Instinct as well, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. That he's improving as he goes kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah, and but of course, defeat is what they ultimately take as... As Gohan and Piccolo's plan pays off, as Gohan protects his green dad so he can charge up.
Yeah.
No special being canon. Well, it takes a while, but when it fucking works, it works.
Yep.
And that great cut between Goku and Gohan doing their Kamehamehas as well.
At the different stages of it. Yes. Yeah. Really nice.
That was nice, but I kind of wished we had seen a little bit more of this Gohan and Piccolo tag team fight with the other Nameks, because it would have got a lot more of an emotional payoff just then, because we've seen Goku fight all this time as well, but then
it had
this whole kind of father-son sort of thing going on, but I feel like probably would have been more impactful emotionally if we had seen a little bit more of what happened between what's going on in that other fight, you know? It was still a cool shot, but they do good. Yeah. It wasn't the best it could have been.
It was Gohan, rather, who'd figured out that they weren't just two Nameks. Rather than Piccolo, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, they kind of both get the feeling where they both, like, okay, we are now in sync with all Nameks.
Yeah.
Because we too are all Nameks, yeah.
Gohan's the one who says, yeah, you don't worry about killing these guys, because I'm pretty sure they can take whatever we throw at them.
Yeah, because it's like special beam cannon, that's a killer move.
Yes.
It shoots a hole through you.
Yes, well, they get a hole in the stomachs, and yet, Cauliflower still tries to beat them up as their universe is being wiped from existence.
Mm. Yeah.
And they're like, no, we've got holes in our stomachs, leave me alone.
We're injured. We're about to be erased. Nope. Pride made a promise.
So we first get Universe 2 taking it in good-naturedly, going out with love.
Yeah.
As they do one final pose.
Were they talking to us, the audience, there? Because it's like, you'll always remember us, and our love will always live on in your hearts. And I was like, who are you talking to? Because if it's your universe, no, it fucking
does. No, I think they're talking to all the other universes, whoever's going to survive.
I figured, yeah.
And us, the viewers. I always remember them. Yes. I'm going to miss them. Because they were great.
Yeah, no, they were pretty fun.
And then we get Universe 7 going, and Champa's the last to go. And
Universe 6, I mean.
6,
I mean,
even, seven, yeah.
7 is on top of the pile right now.
Yeah.
Yes, 6 going, and Champa's the last one to go, and Beerus can't look at his brother.
Yeah, Beerus is kind of dealing with I'm about to kill my own brother, this sucks. But not being able to admit it, obviously, himself. Yeah.
But the Champa pulling a face at him as he's going is just perfect.
Yeah.
Classic
Champ. Kissing fingers. of course he'd be that way.
Yeah. And then Beerus just going, telling somebody to say something, as if to just need to move past this moment.
Give me a minute.
Not crying.
Yeah.
But when Vados had already moved across to the Universe 7 area.
It's like, oh no, what will we do? I mean you, of course. I'll be fine. It's like, you son of a bitch, gone over to sit beside her brother. dear.
Anyway, next week we finally find out what's going on with those two people on Universe 4 who we can't see.
Yeah, small, apparently.
Or perhaps just invisible.
Probably both. Whether the two of them are both, or one is one and the other is the other. We'll see.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully that'd be good too. We'll say there's some pretty good cuts of animation on this as well. They're pretty kind of upping the game, not necessarily going for a very long extended cuts, so just like putting in if we have the time and fun people available, let's just do a cool couple. Let's kind of stick one in here every once in a while to kind of spruce it up a little bit, and it's nice.
Yeah.
It all adds up, you know. Even if it isn't one long continuous scene that looks fucking extravagant, just those little bits here and there add up to a lot. Which is a good approach, I would say, for a company as stretched as Toei is.
Yeah, I've not watched One Piece for a while, so I don't know what that's looking like for what the Pretty Cure show is looking like for this to look so great. But but yeah, this is an amazing show, I would say.
I think the only thing they could do to screw it up is to not bring back all those fun characters.
Yeah.
Which they gotta do.
They gotta do. I mean, characters have promised that they will, so. We shall see. Who's left in Universe 4? That's what I was wondering. It's been a while since I've looked at who's...
The listings, yeah, yeah.
That guy Vegeta is fighting.
The little blue spiky man. Guy. The two... Oh, he's from Universe 3, the changing guy. He's from the robot universe, yeah.
Oh, okay, right.
The science universe or whatever it was called, yeah.
I'll check it out next week. We might not even have to worry after next week's episode anyway. So.
They might be gone straight away, yeah.
Well, I know there's two invisible people there. I don't know if it's probably the most important.
Well, that will save them some animation. maybe they built that in. I got an idea. Let's have two characters who you can't see.
Oh, that saves so much budget.
And we'll schedule it right after this kind of pivotal plot episode. We're going to need to put a bit more effort into it.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm perfectly happy to give them a lot of slack now for a few episodes in terms of what it looks like.
Oh, they've been knocking out of the park for a while, yeah. Mm.
Right-ho. I think that's everything covered. I don't know where you guys get the time to watch those other two shows, but...
Me neither.
Probably, I don't know, time we spend not recording our own podcast. We've got enough time to watch the other anime, but not enough time to sit down and record and watch the things for our own podcast. But hopefully that'll change soon.
Well, I've got that volume one of Banana Man when you're ready. And that's probably only about two anime episodes worth of Banana Man, so. Righty-ho. Well, I can tell you, if you don't know what... Is anything coming up on Secret Sailor Madness, then?
We have planned, certainly. if we can fit it in. Maybe I can do it this week, because I will have a little bit of time to squeeze it in there. We might do Rise of the Guardians, which is... It's got Santa, so I missed a Christmas film.
Close enough.
I remember which one. I thought I'd get that mixed up with The Owls of Ghoul.
It may have a lot of the same staff crossover on there, so if you listen to the podcast, if you do it, we'll find out for you.
But less Zack Snyder. On Dynamite in the Brain next week, I believe it will be famous anime podcast with the last part of our famous light novel adaptations, where we'll be joined by Aaron Long as our special guest. And no dot hack sign voting in this time like we did for our pilot episode. Though
phew.
It is discussed. But plenty of things which resemble D&D, because it was late 90s light novel adaptations, so it was all in the wake of Lodoss War.
Yes.
That ends this week's episode of Let's Go! Be back next week to hang with the Let's Go gang, and if you can't get enough of us, you can find our regular podcast at secretofthesailormanners.com and dynamiteinthebrain.com. Goodbye!
Bye.
G'day!